It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. From the earliest years of our nation's history, there have been two books published each year to guide gardeners, cooks, housekeepers, and farmers on a range of topics, including seasonal weather. The Farmer's Almanac and the Old Farmer's Almanac include long-range predictions of weather in the United States. This year, both books predicted a colder-than-normal winter for our area. But what about the rest of the country? How accurate are the famed almanacs? Paul Knight is a Penn State climatologist and co-host of the WPSU-TV program Weather World out of State College. He joins us by phone from there to talk about long-range weather prediction. Paul Knight, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be with you.
And for the sake of this conversation, Paul, and for our listeners, we looked at the winter forecast from the Farmer's Almanac out of Lewiston, Maine. The Almanac's managing editor, Sandy Duncan, spoke with us briefly about some of the methods and the history of the predictions.
The Farmer's Almanac weather predictions are based on a formula that dates back to the early 1800s. The first edition of the Farmer's Almanac was actually published in 1818, and our founding editor, who was a poet, astronomer, and a teacher, came up with some mathematical and astronomical formula that related what the sunspot activity would do to the weather, as well as tidal action of the moon, position of the planets, and a variety of other factors. So it is a real live formula, and it's been handed down from weather prognosticator to weather prognosticator. Over the almost 200 years that the Farmer's Almanac has been printed and published, we've only had 7 weather prognosticators, so when they take over the job, they do it for quite some time. And of course, over the years, he's changed some of the things that he looked at, but he basically really uses many of the rules that were set back in the 1800s.
How does the formula work?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't know all the details of the formula. The formula is actually a secret formula that only our weather prognosticator, who is a real person, but he also has a fake name. He goes by the name of Caleb Weatherby. But basically, he looks at, like I mentioned, some sunspot activity, tidal action of the moon, position of the planet, and a variety of other rules that over the years he's been able to relate certain activity or certain sunspot activities with certain types of weather. He actually makes the predictions almost 2 years in advance. So the 2014 weather predictions were basically done 2 years ago. Some years sunspot activity is a big factor, and I think when sunspot activity is very low, it usually coincides with a very cold winter. So that's kind of what we're in right now. So there's different factors for different pieces of the formula.
Why all the mystery here? Why is the formula secret? Why is Caleb Weatherby a made-up name?
Well, you know, it kind of sometimes some people think maybe these days it should be brought out attention, but there are so many treasured handwritten kind of things with the Farmer's Almanac. There's kind of a mystique, and we don't really want people to know what our formula is so they could apply it to their weather forecasting ability. But he is a real person, and he is really does very well with the weather. He has a lot of talent and experience, and he uses the Farmer's Almanac predictions. So just like Coke and KFC, we'd like to predict our true formula so that people can't try to make a Farmer's Almanac prediction with their formula.
How accurate would you say that your writers are?
Well, people that follow our forecast, they were about 80 to 85% accurate. And what we do is we break the country into 7 zones. And some of the zones are quite large, and sometimes local conditions could come into play. And we do the weather for 3 days at a time. And people that look at our forecast, I think, are really trying to plan ahead. You know, they use the Farmer's Almanac to see what's going to come the next season or 2 seasons ahead of time. And we're probably one of the only sources that will go out on a limb and be bold enough to say that, you know, this winter is going to be really cold, or this summer is going to be really hot, or whatever we see in the forecast.
And why continue this approach for all these years?
Because it's been pretty accurate. I mean, no one can predict the weather with 100% accuracy. And I think that's kind of what's fun about the weather in this crazy high-tech world is that even though some people who use radar and computer screens and that kind of stuff, they still get it wrong. So our weather formula seems pretty accurate. And I think sometimes people give us a little more leeway than perhaps they would their local forecaster because they're doing it a day or two ahead of time. And like I said, we do a forecast up to 2 years in advance. So it's worked for us, and we're going to stick by it.
And that was Sandy Duncan, managing editor of the Farmer's Almanac out of Lewiston, Maine. And their prediction, by the way, for this year reads as follows. For 2013, 2014, we are forecasting a winter that will experience below average temperatures for about two-thirds of the nation. A large area of below normal temperatures will predominate from roughly east of the Continental Divide to the Appalachians, north and east through New England. Coldest temperatures will be over the northern plains, on east into the Great Lakes. Paul, they seem to have gotten it right. Again, our guest from Penn State, Paul Knight, co-host of the WPSU-TV program Weather World. So, Paul, how do they do it?
Well, you know, I'm always glad when somebody gets it right. This is good. So I'll give them kudos for whatever way they came up with to be able to see this coming. You know, I answer when I get it right in terms of my longer range forecast. My answer is that the blind squirrel finds a nut.
Well, so you're saying that is this based more? Does the almost spot on prediction for this year, is it more having to do with some sort of a system, a formula that really works, or is it just plain luck?
I think it's plain luck. You know, in the 200 years that they've been doing their business, the science has come a long way. I mean, we had no satellites, we had no computers, we had no radar, we weren't measuring the ocean temperatures. These things, which really help a lot in making forecasts, be quite accurate today. I mean, they're, you know, really, think about it, in the 24 to 48 to 72 hours, most of the time, most of the forecasts are very, very good. Now, when you get into this longer range period, forecasting seasons in advance, it's still really in its, I would say, probably its infancy in terms of our ability to do it with a great deal of skill. And those who are trying it, you know, I think it's good that they're trying. I have no trouble with folks making seasonal forecasts. But this is science, and the way science proceeds, and this is true in medicine also, that when you have something that works, you publish it and you disclose your methodology. Otherwise, it ends up being nothing more than perhaps chance. And this is where, you know, granted, we're not asking them to tell everything, but, you know, give us a break. Tell us, you know, if you've been doing it for 200 years and you haven't told us haven't told anybody except, you know, seven forecasters who pass this along, that does not engender integrity.
So I don't know how much you've kept track, but, I mean, is the Farmer's Almanac, whether it's luck or whether it's a system, as they say, that works for them and for the people that refer to the Farmer's Almanac, from year to year, does it have a track record of being accurate?
Well, the Farmer's Almanac out of Maine, I've not paid quite as close attention to as the old Farmer's Almanac out of New Hampshire. And that one, there was a time for about a half a dozen, maybe eight years or so, in the early part of the 2000s, that my colleague and I, who host and produce this program called Weather World, we actually tracked the Farmer's Almanac to our viewers during the wintertime, not during the summer. But winter is really where it's more exciting anyway, and if they're going to have skill, we understand that there'll be skill more likely in the winter because that's when the departures from normal are bigger. And we found out that in terms of precipitation, they were right, you know, maybe 40 or 45% of the time. With temperature, it was closer to 65% of the time. You know, that means if you have a dartboard, you'd actually do better in precip forecasting than you would than the Farmer's Almanac, the old Farmer's Almanac.
Well, how much better are men like yourself who are meteorologists, or, you know, just the people that we see on TV predicting the weather?
Well, the people on TV are probably not predicting seasonal weather. I don't imagine they are, because that's not really what they're hired for. But the folks who are into seasonal predictions, such as the Climate Prediction Center of the National Weather Service and other companies that are around that are trying to do a credible job, you know, their skill, I think if you're doing really well, you're up around 70%, and that would be forecasting in temperature. Nobody really predicts precipitation very well very far in advance. I don't care what they say. I'm telling you, I've been a forecaster for 35 years. and it just doesn't work. You can't predict precipitation months in advance, other than by blind luck.
Are there aspects of nature, though, that can be observed to help make long-range weather predictions, such as the ones that the farmers' almanacs are trying to make?
I completely agree. I think that there are aspects of nature, and especially when we get into the celestial parts, that is, the effects of the sun primarily, the planet alignment and stuff like that, I think that has pretty well been dismissed in the science. Not that it doesn't have some very small effect. The sun, no doubt, has a huge effect. And as far as their formula relates to sunspots and the cycles of sunspots, I think that's very good. And I think they're on the right track. What we'd like to know is, and we, I mean the profession, in the meteorological profession, is tell us a little bit more. don't you've been holding your cards for 200 years. What's so secretive that we can't learn from you?
And you mentioned something earlier, Paul, that I thought was interesting about how the idea or the concept of long-range weather prediction is in its infancy. How might it be possible to get a long-range idea of weather patterns a season ahead of time? If it's doable and it's in its infancy, then where do we need to go to make it happen?
Well, we need to better understand the effects of small changes in the sun, and not just the sunspots, but there are other aspects of the sun, such as these solar flares and other things like that, that how that energy then interacts with our atmosphere to precipitate or to cause some of these adjustments in the weather patterns. That part is really not understood very well, and if having read a bunch of the literature, we're still just trying to crack open that one. And it'll take a while till we understand it, and then once we understand it, we can perhaps make computer simulations of it. So that's where we're headed. Also, when it comes to seasonal forecasts, for the most part, other than for understanding the sun, which is extremely important, we need to better understand the role of the oceans too. And what skill we do have in seasonal forecasting is based upon the fact that we are monitoring the oceans better and predicting the oceans, such as the El Niño, La Niña, the sea surface temperature anomalies in the equatorial Pacific. Those drive seasonal temperature and precipitation anomalies in both hemispheres.
We're talking with Paul Knight. He's a Penn State climatologist and co-host of a program that originates out of WPSU-TV. It's called Weather World. And so he has television experience, and some of the more famous meteorologists in the United States are those who appear on television. And, Paul, I'm curious about whether accountability is a problem for meteorology in general. We've been talking specifically about the Farmer's Almanac, but there was an instance this week, you probably have heard about this, an Alabama weatherman who's been on TV for 35 years. He got called out for, or he called for, a dusting of snow, but instead, as we all know, they got a couple of inches down there, thousands of people became stranded, and he took a barrage of criticism from people calling him out on Facebook and Twitter. What do you think of that whole particular episode?
It was unfortunate that he made such a light forecast of the snow, because it seemed to us from a distance, even here in Pennsylvania, that there was going to be a real problem. But a real problem, of course, in Pittsburgh, 2 inches, just kind of dust it off and go your way. Obviously, in Alabama or Georgia, for that matter, they don't, because they don't have the equipment or they don't really know how to drive in this sort of stuff. Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think we're held pretty to a high degree of accountability. Insofar as you had to take some lumps, so be it. If this is the profession that you choose, and you put your face on television and you make proclamations, you have to have some accountability. So I feel for him. I've had my own lumps that I've taken in my career, but that just comes with the turf.
You know, for all we know, Caleb Weatherby could be a nom de plume for Willard Scott, who was, of course, the dean of television, or one of the deans of television weather forecast. Did you have an idol growing up? I mean, people might remember Joe DiNardo here in Pittsburgh on television. Was there somebody on TV that was doing weather predicting that that sort of set the standard for you?
Well, I remember watching them, sure, but I didn't grow up in Pittsburgh. I grew up in New York City, so I remember the likes of Donna Reed and Tex Antoine, and these are the folks who were presenting the weather. Of course, they were all very talented presenters, but none of them were meteorologists. I guess the first one was Dr. Frank Field, but he was an optometrist, as it turns out.
And didn't he have a son or daughter named Storm Fields who also went on television?
Yes, Storm Field. And Storm Field actually did get some training in meteorology, but unfortunately his career was relatively short-lived.
All right. Well, since you grew up in the New York area, let's get to the moment we've been waiting for, which is taking place, it refers to something taking place in New York this weekend, the Super Bowl. What does the weather look like for the Super Bowl, which is being played outdoors in a cold weather climate for the first time? And by the way, Paul, the Almanac is forecasting stormy weather for the New York, New Jersey area on Sunday. We're talking really stormy, according to the Farmer's Almanac.
Well, at this stage, we're just 48 hours plus 60 hours away. There's no big storm coming. There will be a front crossing through Northern New Jersey, New York metropolitan area, during Sunday evening, and there may be a shower or two, but in fact, temperatures will probably be slightly above normal, so it will not be, a normal I think is 40, so it'll probably be in the low 40s on Sunday. When the game arrives, it'll probably be in the 30s, but nothing that's too hard to take, certainly nothing that fans of the Steelers have already endured this season.
Paul Knight is a Penn State climatologist joining us by phone from State College. Paul, thanks so much for being with us on Essential Pittsburgh.
My pleasure.
Coming up, battling seasonal affective disorder. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.